Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Spesh.
Hello.
Welcome back, Derek.
Thanks, man.
You've been gone for what, like 3 weeks or something?
I have.
A month?
Been,
a year?
Yeah. I've been gone from work for 3 weeks, but I was here that first vacation week recording.
Yeah, I haven't seen you in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Wow. It's been peaceful here. I got so much. Without you here, I renovated my bathroom.
Is that what you did on Tuesday nights?
Yes, on Tuesday nights. Tuesday night with bathroom reno night.
It looks great. Looks good.
It works.
Yes.
You can use a toilet. It flushes. You can wash your hands and fill the sink with water. And
well, you could still do all the things before. It's just not as efficiently.
True. All I know is that if we ever have a leaky sink again, I'm living with it.
I'm going to burn the house down.
Well, I actually said that to a lady at the Home Depot because I was trying to get this wallpaper glue off.
Oh.
I don't know what kind of wallpaper they glue they used. And I said, if this stuff that she gave me doesn't work, I'm just burning the house down. I got no time for this anymore. Yeah.
Because the previous owner had a wallpaper border just in the top 10 inches of the wall.
Yeah, it was, 10 to 12 inches all around the bathroom.
Yeah.
And they used it to cover a couple of holes that were there. And
it's like, that's why I hung posters as a kid. It's like, oh, I just punched another hole in the wall.
Right.
I better hang in another poster.
Right. Anyway, yeah, the leaky hot water tap turned into a full bathroom renovation.
It started
What I thought was going to be a $10 part turned into a new sink, new cabinet for under the sink, new mirror, new painting the entire bathroom
it
and
just
ceiling.
Cascades. I've done that.
Toilet.
I've started something small at the house, and it's like, oh, I'm just going to fix this. And then Siobhan will come home from work and see the bathroom half torn apart. It's like, I thought you just had to fix that one thing. Yeah, well, but if I did this, I had to do this, and to do that, I had to do this other thing, and then because I did that, I might as well do this.
Mm-hmm.
It cascades.
Well, and it was like, well, no, I'm just going to take the toilet off and put it in the hallway, because I'm not going to be that guy that doesn't paint behind the toilet. But no, of course, that didn't work, because the bolts... Let's just say the bolts ended up being sheared and the part of the toilet cracked.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, you know what? I think it's time for a new toilet. And that led me to the knowledge that in Ajax, you know how you can put big items out on the curb? Every other week on the curb? Yeah. Unless it's ceramics.
Yes, you have to
call
for that.
You have to call for an appointment.
Yes, it's a ceramic pickup day.
And you know when you find that out?
When they don't
pick
it up.
When your toilet is sitting there for 2 days and you're wondering, why didn't they pick my toilet up? So you go online and to find a contact number and it says, ceramics, you have to make an appointment. I have not told the guy up the road that still has his toilet out 2 weeks later. It was in there for 2 weeks, dude. They're not picking it up.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, good time was not had by all.
Yeah. But it's done now.
It's done, yeah. And then, we had from upstairs when we redid our bathroom there last year, which is the bigger issue, we had a towel rack holder left. So, oh, we'll just use that. Okay. And then I said, where do we want this? She goes, oh, that's kind of a big shower or towel rack for this bathroom. Okay, well, I can cut it down. What's that? Well, let me think about it. And then I go away for the weekend. I come back and we have a new shower or a new towel rack that she went and bought. It's actually a ring.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, really? Like, I could have made this.
Well, you only need a hand towel in there anyways.
No, I know, but we didn't need to spend the $25. I could have just cut the hand towel bar that we have.
Yeah. You just
from 2 feet to 1 foot.
What you gotta do is put a wood screw in the wall, right? And just leave it sticking out a 3/4 inch, and you
apparently
can have towels
that's
off it.
Not good enough. And sticking a dowel into the wall so that you can just put the toilet paper on.
Yeah.
Apparently that's not good enough. Oh, new bathroom renovations happening. Then we're getting picky. Next time, yeah, we're just going to put a bowl under the leaky tap,
yeah,
and use that caught water to water the plants in the house.
Got to remember, every day we have to water the plants. So that bowl fills up.
Jumping jiminies. Anyway, so yes, now we have a fully renovated bathroom.
Nice.
Oh, but the good thing that came out of it, my Black & Decker power drill has been acting funny.
So I saw pictures of that. Is that mm-hmm. thing from the 40s?
No, it's from the late 80s. It works. But when you turn it, sorry, not anymore, because I fixed it. I took it apart. When you turn it, when you have it up and down straight,
yeah,
it wouldn't work. But then you had to turn it.
Loose wire.
Like, you know, you see in a movie some guy holding a gun, right? So you had to turn it to the left so the handle was actually sticking facing the right.
Yeah.
And then it would click because there was some wire inside. Loose wire.
You needed gravity assist.
You needed gravity assist, yes. Yes. My Black & Decker drill is gravity assist. Anti-theft.
Yeah.
So I took it apart because I got tired of that. And I'm fixing this. And while I was waiting between coats of primer and,
yeah,
and paint and that, I took that apart and... Well, there we go. And put that back in there. And bzzz,
hey, it works.
I can turn it upside down. I can spin it around, whatever, and it's still working. So it was productive.
Excellent.
Yeah, things happened while you were gone.
Yeah.
There were things going on. So you went to the East Coast.
I did.
With a family vacation.
So I was supposed to do 2 trips, and then I canceled on one because I needed so much time to get ready for the East Coast trip. So I was supposed to go on a motorcycle trip with the boys,
right,
supposed to circle Ontario and Tobermory and Manitoulin Island, and supposed to cross the Chichibon Ferry and head down the coast of Huron into Sarnia and stuff. But I said, nope, I need more time than I thought to pack for the camping trip. Anyways, so it was a combination of camping, hotel, motel, Airbnb. It was a really nice trip. It was everybody had fun. It was just the timing was right because the kids are just old enough that they would appreciate going into some art place or some museum or whatever, or to hikes and so on, right? So mm-hmm. everybody was of the right age that it's like, oh, this will work. So this was our first really big trip with the kids. Last time we did a trip like this, Beckett was like, I don't know, 2 months, 3 months old, and Sel was just under 3. And we did pretty much the same route back then, right? But with 2 young kids, they had no idea what was going on.
Yeah.
So they were easy. They just slept all the time anyway when you're driving.
They didn't talk back at that age.
Yeah, exactly. So they appreciated it. We did a lot of hiking. So we did a national park, so Cushapaquack Park in New Brunswick. Stayed a couple nights there, did lots of hikes, did the flower pots, the tidal bore, and stuff like that. And then...
Did you go on the tidal bore or did you see it?
No, we just saw it. We went down the floor, walked on the ocean floor, yada, yada, yada. The timing wasn't always right for some of the stuff. So there was one day where we could have done the tidal bore, but it was... Where we were, we had a choice. We could go and see the tidal bore and we would have caught it, or we could have gone to a cheese place. We did the cheese place. We opted for the cheese.
Good choice.
Yes, because I brought you some.
And if it wasn't for me, you would have never known about the cheese place, and you guys could have been getting the tidal bore instead.
World-renowned, award-winning blue cheese.
Oh, yeah. Dragon's Breath blue cheese.
Yeah, it was very good. Very good.
Yeah,
and lots of Gouda and
different flavors.
Yeah, different flavors. So I spent almost, I don't know how much I spent. I spent a lot of money on cheese that trip.
You're welcome.
So the slice of Gouda that I brought you.
Yeah.
So we got a similar. So we got jalapeno,
Yeah, because they get like 20 flavors.
New smoked. And it was one of them. We bought the entire wheel.
Really?
The entire wheel of Gouda. So when we do cut it open, we're going to have to, because we can't possibly eat that much cheese. But it was, individually, it would be probably $150, $200 for cheese. But as a roll uncut, $37.
What?
Because every slice was like $10 or more, $10, $12. But if you cut up all those 1-inch slices all around in the whole ball of cheese, the whole roll of cheese, I don't know, like you'd probably be about $150, $200.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was like looking at weights, looking at the big wheel of cheese, looking at weights. It's like, okay, I want a couple different ones, but I'm going to get, we got a medium old Gouda with nothing fancy flavor, just so.
And they thought they would enjoy it, but that's when Derek found out his entire family was lactose intolerant. was not a fun ride home.
We did crack open a bunch of that cheese there one night. We had cheese and crackers and wine and yada, yada, yada. The kids didn't have wine. We did, though.
The kids just whined.
They just whined. Yeah.
Wow. But yeah,
so it was a lot of, we did like a ton of hiking and stuff on, like I was exhausted there a couple of days. And so Cape Breton, we did a back and forth through the Highlands there and did a tour of the Glenora Distillery and Fort Louisbourg. Mm-hmm. That was an amazing tour.
See, we never did that when we were down there. We did a Digby.
It was interesting enough, like because we drove to get there. Next time we want to stay near there, actually you can stay in Louisbourg, mm-hmm. $133 a night. There's 6 rooms in one of the older buildings. And it's like, oh, okay, I'm doing that. The guy who was chasing us out at 5 to 5, he was like escorting us out. He said, oh, if you want to stay here at night, it's that building there. You can stay in overnight and we lock you in for the night and type thing. Anyways, it's like, oh, cool, I'll do that. And it's like, it was very apparent that he was like kind of rushing us out or saying, you know, kind of guiding us out through the front gate.
Right.
It's like, so it's like, I get the hint, buddy. I get the hint.
I'm not saying you got to leave, but why are you still here?
But yeah, I saw enough of Louisbourg to know that I want to go back and have a longer day there. Because it was very fascinating. It was first built. I'll be very quick. It was first built because the French needed a place to. The fisheries had somewhat collapsed over in Europe. And so there was a lot of codfish here. So the codfish was salted and sent back to France. So France, to protect their fishing industry, built Fort Louisbourg. Fort Louisbourg was there simply because of the codfish. That's why it was there. And so it was a giant fort. And the Americans and helped by the British first came in and took it over in 1748. And then the French came over en masse and took it back in 1749 or something. And then 1756, the British came in and the British, as big a jerks as the British can be, because they just want to
rule the world at the
exactly.
time.
Yeah. Anyways, they came in. They didn't want the fort. They just didn't want France to have it.
Right.
So they destroyed it so badly that the French just, okay, never mind. They went away.
Cheers now.
Anyways, and so the archaeological work started in the 40s and 50s. And in the 60s, somebody says, because the coal mines had all closed down, or mm-hmm. a lot of them were closing down, and coal industry was really collapsing. So they said, we need to put these people to work. We're going to have a massive issue here with people out of work. Because there was thousands of coal miners that were going to be out of work. So coal miners learned a new trade.
Building forts.
They rebuilt Louisbourg. But they only rebuilt, and it's what we saw was huge, and it was one quarter of the fort that was there.
Really?
So they rebuilt it, and credit to the French, just like what you'd see with the Germans, is they documented everything with drawings. And so if you brought over, if they brought over like something to build the fort, it was in 3D images and you name it. There's a whole bunch of stuff that you can see. So when the federal government decided to have this make work program, they had a lot of, there was, what did they say? There was 1.2 million pages of details on how the fort was built in the first place.
Really?
And everything that was brought there to build it.
Wow.
So they were able to get a darn near perfect duplicate of Fort Louberg in near coastal of Sydney in Cape Breton. And they did a fantastic job. He said everybody learned a new trade. There was like all, they were all stonemasons by the time they were done. Stonemasons would like everything. They rebuilt everything. And so they had, everything was rebuilt. Everything was rebuilt from scratch. From these millions of pages. So it was fascinating. I want to go back. Got to go back. Anyways.
Yeah, that's what we found out when we went up the East Coast. Everything we saw, there was a few things that we didn't get to spend enough time doing.
Yeah, exactly.
There's right? But I mean,
time.
It's a whole province trying to
I know.
See so much stuff.
I can't see it all.
You went paddling, though.
I did go paddling. So in one of the places, it was just outside of Metigan in Nova Scotia, south coast inside by the Bay of Fundy. It was... we just Airbnb'd somebody's RV and he had a couple sit on top kayaks. So we Beckett was bugging me because when they discovered there's kayaks, hey, I want to go kayaking. Can I go kayaking? And it's like, he just unmercifully. And I thought, I don't want to spend all this time trying to figure out how to get him to learn how to kayak. Right. And finally I said, okay, fine. Let's go. So we went to the beach. When we came back from the beach, We walked down and he climbed onto the kayak and just kayaked. And I'm thinking, my job is done here.
See ya, suckers.
I couldn't believe how easily he just took to it. It was like just natural.
Mm-hmm.
He'd never been on one before.
So now you have a kayak buddy.
Yeah. Well, I don't have two kayaks. I only have one. But
right now
I could drag him behind. But yeah, and so Stella came down afterwards and she'd never been in a kayak, and see, she hopped on one and just paddled off. It's like, I thought, you know, there's going to be some, well, these sit on tops, they're very stable. So I thought there's going to be some balance issues. I thought I'm going to be hauling them out of the water a few times, but no, they got on it. They never dumped. They just naturally took the paddle. Beckett got a wicked blister, lost some skin on one thumb because he didn't know to, and I never thought to tell him to be careful about pressure points on the paddle blade or the handle. But yeah, so... they just took to it naturally.
Now, that was on the Bay of Fundy?
No, that was... so, this was a river, a saltwater river, business affected by tides. So, the river levels went up and down and stuff like that. So, we didn't go actually onto the Bay of Fundy, but you could see the Bay of Fundy. I didn't want to take them out. There was fog and the waves were rolling in. It mm-hmm. wouldn't have been a good idea to get them out on the water.
Yeah. Not for the first time. You got to wait a day.
Exactly. So it was nice and calm. It was a little bit windy, but it was the water was calm and a nice light fog. And so me and Beckett went out, and then Siobhan and Stella went out. And
see, this is how it starts.
I know. They loved it. They had a great time.
See?
Yeah. So it was very cool. It was very nice to see them take to kayaking so naturally.
Good.
Right? Because, like, I don't want to be too critical, but Siobhan still can't stern paddle a canoe.
It's been maybe two decades. Your kids will.
Yeah. So right? Stella's taken to it pretty naturally. I haven't tried Beckett in the stern yet, but yeah.
So put Stella in the back?
Stella will be a stern paddler.
And
Siobhan will always be the motor. She'll be the engine.
Beckett will be at the front.
Yeah.
Right? And you're at the back of the other mm-hmm. canoe. See? Yeah.
There you go.
That's how it works. That's how it works in our family.
Yeah. But yeah, it was a really good trip. We got to see a lot of stuff. We did a lot of stuff on beaches. We got to kayak. We, you know, we collected seashells and we collected rocks. And so there's lots of stuff. It was a lot of fun. Oh, campfire wood. Like, I can't believe, for one, how cheap, but for two, how dry the campfire wood was. So in New Brunswick at the National Park, was pretty much the exact same wood as the two Nova Scotia campgrounds we went to for provincial parks. and it was just hardwood and very dried, like 2+ seasons drying.
Like, so not like Algonquin Park wood that still
no, you can ring it out first. No, you have to pour a gallon of fuel on it, and you're still trying to get it lit.
Yeah.
So I remember in we did a national park in it's in Quebec on the peninsula there. What's it called? North of New Brunswick.
Not Tatamagouche.
No, it's I can't. Whatever it is, we bought wood there. We bought 4 bags of wood because we're going to be there for 2 nights. This was like 3-4 years ago, mm-hmm. and we barely managed to get it to light, and I was blowing and blowing on it, trying to get it lit, and I got a piece of one log lit, and it's like, yay, it's lit, and so put a bunch of smaller pieces on top, and then it slowly sizzled out, and so I gave 3.5 bags of wood to the neighbor. I said, good luck. This didn't work out for us.
They curse your name to this day.
Yes. Because I wasn't going to try to light a fire again. I just, you know what? I would be much more relaxed not having a fire than trying to get that wood to burn, which was like Algonquin Park wood or like yeah. Ontario Provincial Parks wood. I don't know why they used so much green wood and wet wood. So
they say they season it and they let it dry. And
they do not.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So a good time was had by all.
It was good. It was the
not long enough as per usual.
I guess the suckiest part would be getting there and getting back, just because it was all business for that portion. It was just driving through Quebec for highway.
But you break that up though.
We did. So we stayed at a couple places. On the way down, we stayed halfway through Quebec, and on the way back, we stayed at another halfway point in Quebec, and so it broke it up a bit, and it was kind of neat. We totally read a couple times. We were rednecking it, cooking hot dogs in a parking lot, and anyways, at this hotel, it was our very last night on the road. The next day, we're going to make it home, and I said, "Well, there's a restaurant attached to the hotel. No, we'll just have hot dogs." It's like, we could have vegetables. No, just cook hot dogs. So there I am outside the motel door on the sidewalk. People walking by. Here I am with a camp stove boiling up some hot dogs.
And they're tossing money into your pot. Here you go, sir. Here you go.
Bunch of kids walking by, looking at us, and it was like, what are they doing?
$10 hot dog.
Why are they cooking on the sidewalk?
See, at least with me, I would do it on the tailgate of my truck.
See, I don't have a truck. I have an SUV, and I didn't want to get too much. The lid is open, and so it's right above the flame, right?
Yes.
Oh, and I had to balance it. So I carried the mixed fuel, the butane fuel canisters mm-hmm. in the rooftop carrier. Mm-hmm. So the small green one that I had, I ran out of fuel in the big white one. So the small green one, halfway through the trip, I pulled it out to use it. And it got so hot that the concave became convex.
Oh.
So I tried bashing it in flat with a big rock so it wouldn't work. So I had to sit there and hold the stove because it was going to tip over. So it was manual flame only.
The trials and tribulations of Derek.
Yes.
The continuing story.
I'm pleased that the canister didn't explode.
Yeah. That might have been a detriment.
Yes. Yeah. Blew the whole rooftop carrier off the roof. Because it's like in the summer we use it for camping, and in the winter we put our skis in it, right?
So right.
It's just one of those black carriers. But yeah, there he was on a sidewalk cooking hot dogs in Quebec.
It's getting ready for the old zombie apocalypse.
Yeah. And it was, I think, the third or fourth time we cooked hot dogs in a parking lot.
Really?
Yeah. We did it at a beach one day. And
there's the specials in the parking lot again.
A rest stop, two rest stops, a beach, and a sidewalk beside a motel.
She always just makes sandwiches.
Well, I had sandwiches, and we did a bunch of rest stops where we did wraps and mm-hmm. and ham sandwiches and stuff like that. But
because it's faster when you're traveling.
It is, just to stop
and make something. Just to stop, make a sandwich.
Which is what we did. So,
as opposed to going to a restaurant. Yeah.
And Beckett doesn't... So when you make a sandwich for Beckett, it's the meat and the bread. Do you want anything on it? it's like, no, he doesn't want. So a ham sandwich, he can't put ketchup
no
on a
ketchup,
ham sandwich.
Mayo or mustard.
He didn't want
or
anything. So we had like sliced up cucumbers and cheese and mayonnaise and mustard. And so the three of us have these giant wraps. And he has this skinny little cigar size wrap with just ham in it. And it's like, is it good?
Yeah, it's good.
It's like, okay, whatever.
All right, pal.
So we did the hot dogs because it kept him happy.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, takes after you, buddy.
Yeah. But yeah, it was good. It was a lot of fun. We did a lot of neat stuff and
good.
Saw a lot of neat places. And I don't know if anybody listening follows my Instagram, but I posted one Airbnb place where it was like a giant treehouse on top of a mountain overlooking the ocean. That was so cool. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, we won't mention the price.
No, no. You only do it for one night.
Yeah, yeah. Skip out halfway through. All right, well, I, on the other hand...
You did some nice stuff just last weekend.
This weekend was on the go. So if a weekend is 48 hours...
You did more last weekend than
I did. 12 of it was paddling, 12 of it was driving. The rest was all eating and sleeping and... getting ready,
yeah.
Packing, unpacking.
But it looked like a good weekend. I saw a lot of pictures.
It was a good weekend. Lock and paddle was Saturday. There's a Peterborough lift locks on the Trent Severn, which we always do.
Yeah.
There was the Rideau Canal in Ottawa, and then there was the Lachine Canal in Montreal.
Okay.
And John Brower, one of our paddling buddies here, said, why don't we, like, go to Ottawa? So I hummed and hawed, and said, you know what? There are so many people at Peterborough Lift Lock 1.
Mm-hmm.
Let's skip that one, and we'll go to Ottawa.
Yeah.
Okie dokie.
And you've done the Peterborough one a few times.
So oh, yeah. Yeah, we did the nighttime one. They need to do the, like, nighttime one again.
Yeah.
So
I totally would have done the Ottawa one because it's an opportunity to do something different.
Well, and that was my whole thinking of it is like, okay, we'll check it out. And, I mean, we talked about it. So, John had to go pick up his dad in Peterborough.
Mm-hmm.
And so we met. I just drove. I went to my brother's restaurant first in Ottawa to chat with him for a while. And I had lunch there,
yeah,
an early lunch before heading over, and met John and his dad at Hogsback Road. There's a big parking lot with a public park there and all that sort of stuff. There's a launch area, some docks and stuff. So we got there just before it started filling up with cars. Oh,
okay.
Just a quick little paddle. And this is the second year that they've been doing the Ottawa and Montreal one.
Mm-hmm.
So this one was at Hartwell's Lock. So Hartwell's is two locks right next to each other, and where you paddle into the first lock, it lowers, then the doors open, you paddle into the second lock, doors close, the water lowers again, and then you doors open, you continue on your way towards the Ottawa River, right? So, yeah, so we parked at Hogsback Road. You launch, and it's like a five-minute paddle across Mooney's Bay to the top of Hogsback Lock. Waited with other paddlers there for a while till the doors opened, and there were four boats in the lock coming out. They were the last four boats to come out before the locks were shut down for the day.
Oh, okay.
From noon till 5,
oh.
No powered boats.
Oh.
Only human-powered boats.
Oh, really?
Yep. Which we're on, I was on one of the sites looking at info on it, and they said, hey, don't forget the lock and paddle this weekend. And, you know, from this time to this time. And somebody made a comment about, when are you going to start making the paddlers pay for going through locks and that, 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 that. And someone from the Rideau comes, you know, it's free, till September, right? Somebody else came on. Oh, boo-hoo. Yeah. But we've had to pay.
Yes.
You still have to pay whether you're paddling or not.
So
much per foot.
So, yeah, exactly. So, yeah. During Canada's 150, it was free for that summer. And this summer, with Canada Strong, it's free.
Yeah.
And it's for everybody. Anything national. So, when we went to Louisburg, that was free.
Yep.
I didn't know it was a national park. But anyway, so it was free. Like normal, like Kushibokwak wasn't free, but it was 25% off.
Yep.
But entrance fees to museums, anything
like
national.
That. And kids, there's cheaper for kids.
Exactly.
And stuff
so it's not like the paddlers normally get it free. It's this summer it's free.
Yeah. When we did the paddling TV show, we went through the Trent Severn.
Yeah.
And they gave us a discount because we were going all the way through, but we still had to pay.
Yeah.
Right? We still get the little sticker thingy.
And exactly. You can buy a full lock pass at a discount, or you can pay like a gargantuan price for a single lock.
For a single lock. So you pay each time. Yeah. No, we just got the lock pass and went through. Anyway, so that was the last four boats were coming out before they shut the locks down. Once the boats were out, we paddled in and began the process of locking through the two locks that make up Hog's Back. So the Hog's Back lock station in Ottawa consists of two locks, a guard lock and a lift lock.
Yeah.
There are locks 11 and 12 in the Rideau Canal system. Hog's Back area is where the Rideau River and the Rideau Canal meet.
What's the guard lock mean? What is that?
So, and that's why I'm like, what's that other thing? So it's one lift, one guard. The lock lengths are 134 feet or 40.8 meters. Width is 33 feet or 9.7 meters. Average lift 13.8 feet or 4.2 meters. A guard lock primarily regulates water levels and prevents flooding, while a lift lock raises or lowers boats between different water levels. Guard locks act as a barrier against excess water, while lift locks act as a vertical elevator for vessels.
It's just limit flow. Keep water in the higher zone.
Yep. After passing through the locks, we paddled up to the canal about 20 minutes to Hartwell's lock, which is 9 and 10. These two are in flight, so one brings you down, and then you go into the next one, and that brings you lower. Again, same 134 feet long, 33 feet wide, but these are like a total drop of 21 and a half feet. So that was cool to get in there. Made it to Hartwell's. There's a large group of canoes and kayaks already waiting. There's also a dragon boat waiting to go in. The dragon boat comes through. Yeah, it's we were joking. It said senior women's dragon boat team. Half of them weren't women, and there were some young people there.
So,
unless they're using some sort of facial cream that makes them look 40 years younger, sort of thing. Anyway, so yeah, everybody comes out of Hog's Back where the dragon boat went into Hog's Back with us, and then all you're hearing is a guy. Make a hole coming through. And everybody looks back and they're just dragging a boat just ripping through. And it's like, really? Anyway, so they were already down there when we got there. When there was enough people, they opened the first set of doors at Hartwell's and all went in. When it was full, they closed the doors and began the descent. At the bottom of the doors, and they're telling you this, there's a shelf.
Okay.
So you got the doors and there's at the bottom, because the doors don't go all the way to the very, very bottom, right? So there's a shelf. So you got to make sure you're ahead of that shelf and the back of your boat doesn't get hung up on it. Otherwise, the front of your boat keeps going down while the back of your boat stays on the edge of the shelf. This would be an issue. There's always water coming through the door. Doesn't matter how much.
It always squirts
through.
There's
always water coming through. So it looked like there was a waterfall. Which then comes off the shelf like a giant 33-foot wide waterfall.
Yeah.
Right? So that's all coming off. And when the doors at the front of the lock start to open, physics takes over. And the boats at the front start getting shifted backwards.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole...
Look out!
Big block of Tetris canoes and kayaks start drifting backwards into this waterfall. People at the back start backing into the waterfall. Fine if you're a kayak because the water just bounces off.
Yeah.
if you're a canoe like me at the very back, water doesn't bounce off of a deck that is not there. It just tends to act like a bathtub and starts filling up your canoe. So I'm holding onto the wall, pulling myself forward, but the people that are in kayaks farther up are using my gunnels to pull themselves out of the water and pushing me back. So needless to say, by the time they open the doors fully and we could get out of there.
There's some unconscious kayakers.
No, there is. I'm kneeling in my canoe and the water is over my legs.
Oh, wow.
Like it is that deep.
Wow.
So, yeah. So I was like, okay, whatever.
And planned on but getting
yeah, away, I, but yeah, I hadn't planned. So yeah, by the time we got to the, so then the doors open, we all go into the second lock and, yeah, it wasn't a big deal. It was warm out and the water was a bit refreshing.
Sure, but if you had like electronic equipment or anything with you at the time.
Oh, I was tossing stuff up front because I was solo.
Okay.
So the front end was a bit higher.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was tossing. And I always bring that orange flotation cushion.
Okay.
Right? Yeah, and then the orange dry bag here with my gear in it. But I had some stuff out, so I'm tossing it on top of that flotation cushion to keep it, you know.
Save the gear.
Let Sean drown. Save the gear. And but yeah, so we all paddled into the second lock. They closed the doors, adjusted the water level in the first lock so that the second group of paddlers could then get in. Mm-hmm. Then they brought that. So they brought then lowered the first lock halfway, brought the second lock where we were halfway back up so they could open the doors and all of us were together.
Yeah.
And then they said, okay, you can either, if you can either go move in back into the first lock and then head back up to Hog's Back, or you can stay here. We'll finish lowering the second lock down and you can paddle back out and keep going towards Ottawa. Well, we're going to head back in because we've already learned from physics that where we are when they close that door and we go down, we're filling up with more water. So we just, you know, turned around and headed back out there. But, yeah, you know what? It was pretty good. Lots of hooting and hollering and everything. And, you know, good time had by all, singing. And they were asking, you know, trivia questions and playing music and all that sort of stuff. So, we just paddled back to the first lock. They closed the doors, raised it, and, we could get back out to Hog's Back. And, we got there and they were about to close the doors, but they let a bunch of paddlers in. We got out and we portaged around it. There was some stairs and then a tunnel. So you portaged a bit through a tunnel to come out the other side. We were already paddling across back to the vehicles on Mooney's Bay before they'd finished the locks on Hog's Back.
A little bit time consuming.
Yeah, it was definitely time consuming. So, but no, you know what? A great time had by all. There's still some tweaks to be made at the event. It's only their second year doing it.
Yeah.
I think they were maybe after last year compared to this year. I think they're a bit. Ooh, didn't expect. One of the things they need to really look at is how many people they try to jam into the lock at a time.
Yeah, get too many can be dangerous.
Yeah, they should have cut off some of the people that were like they crammed us up into the first one.
Yeah,
they should have made us the front of the second of the second group. But like I say, little tweakies that they should be looking at, and then for next year. At the end of the day, there was like 400 paddlers, 231 canoes and kayaks, and a dragon boat.
Yeah.
Peterborough had 978 canoes and kayaks, more than 1,400 paddlers.
Wow.
But that's where everybody goes, right?
Yep.
And John was saying, we've done Peterborough. We've done the Peterborough nighttime.
Mm-hmm.
We've done Ottawa. Next year, we should hit Lachine. In Montreal. Saint Gabriel Lock, they had about 100 canoes and kayaks.
Oh.
So not a big turnout. Yep. And their locks looked bigger.
Oh, yeah.
And they have a dock on the inside of the lock.
To tie up to?
To that, well, if you wanted to get out.
Oh.
But I'm watching a time-lapse thing. Mm-hmm. The dock goes up and down
mm-hmm.
with the water level. And it's the entire length of the lock.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to get out and hold your boat or get out and stretch your legs while the lock's going down, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
So
but
it's
I'm
a floating
thinking,
dock.
Yeah. And I'm thinking like, oh my God, why doesn't every canal have this?
It's brilliant.
Right? So anyway. So we're thinking maybe a Montreal event next mm-hmm. year.
I'm in.
So that was my, so it was a 4 hour drive to Ottawa.
Yeah.
Ended up being a longer drive home because I stopped at my parents and I knew I shouldn't have done that because that's always 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
So instead of getting home like 10, I'm getting home at 1 a.m.
Yeah.
And then I got to be up early the next morning. So Sunday morning, figured, okay, well, yeah, I'll get out for a paddle, do the lock and paddle on Saturday and haven't been out for paddle in a while. And then Steve Chard from the UK is paddling the Great Loop again. Most people do the Great Loop in big powered boats that you can sleep on, stuff like that. If you want to hear about Steve's first loop, check out episodes 185 and 186 because we actually interviewed him.
That would have been 2019.
Steve is paddling the Great Loop again, this time to raise some funds for the Andrew Simpson Foundation, which raises money to help get kids into paddle sports. He's currently paddling the Trent Severn Waterway and will continue through Lake Huron, then Lake Michigan, all the way to Chicago. And from there, he's going to paddle down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico, circumnavigate Florida to Jacksonville, where he will then head home mid-January for a two-month break. And then we'll catch up with him again next year.
Okay.
If you want to follow Steve's progress, he's on Locato Web. Never heard of this before. LOCATOWEB. It's almost like locator web.
Yeah.
But there's no R.
Yeah, Locato Web.
Yeah, so locatoweb.com/map/single/ 16523421 09. We'll post that. Or you can just keep rewinding this
keep section.
Keep
pausing, rewinding.
If you go to his Facebook page, he posts daily updates. Just search Steve Chard, C-H-A-R-D, in Facebook, and you'll come across his page. And this should be there as well. His location thing will be there as well that you can click on and see where he is. So Alan Drummond, our buddy Alan Drummond, Kingdom Outdoor Products, asked if I was interested in heading up to meet with Steve and paddle with him for the day.
Absolutely.
When do you want to go? Well, it's Sunday. And I'm saying, well, I'm doing the lock and paddle Saturday, and I can get out Sunday. And after all the, I said, all depends how well the renovations go. But I finished the renovations on Thursday, which allowed me to get stuff ready on Friday, do the Saturday lock and paddle, and then the Sunday. We knew that Steve would be somewhere between Fenelon Falls and the Kirkfield Lift Locks, but we wouldn't find out exactly where he was.
Yeah.
And where he was going to call it a night, because that's wherever he was going to end up on the Sunday. That's where we would park and then paddle towards Steve. And then when we met up with him on the water, we would paddle back to where he was going to end or where we had parked. So I received a message as I was driving home from the lock and paddle Saturday night that we would meet at Bob Cajun. Great place, 10:30 in the morning on Saturday or Sunday. Launch, head down and across Pigeon Lake to meet up with Steve.
We met Peter Frank on Pigeon Lake.
The place we interviewed Peter,
mm-hmm.
we passed it.
Oh yeah.
Yep. Look, there's where we
mm-hmm.
look at the little cottage.
Yeah.
That we interviewed Peter. And even John's like, that's not a cottage. They say it's a cottage. For the rest of us, it's
and
a
they
family.
They do live in it. They do treat it like a house.
So John Brower decided, yeah, I'm going to come along too. And he joined us. Alan in his kayak and John and I in my canoe. And it was a beautiful day, partly cloudy, a slight breeze to take some of the heat off.
Keep the bugs away, keep the heat off.
Yeah, no bugs, but did get a nice tan. I mean, look at that color change.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, so we're going to do that. We launched west of Bob Cajun, the Bob Cajun locks, between 10:30 and 11, because, you know, we dilly-dallied. We paddled to the locks, locked through. That was not a long process. However, the boat ahead of us was called the Hakuna Matata, and I would personally like to thank those people for getting that song stuck in my head for the next hour. I'd be sitting there paddling along, like, Hakuna Matata, and the rest of my days. It was like, son of a... I think maybe Alan was starting to get tired of hearing it, too.
Oh, you were singing it.
I was singing it. Just out of the blue, next thing I catch myself singing that stupid song. We took our time paddling out of the canal to Pigeon Lake, down the west shore. We came across a sandbar where there was a few boats anchored and people were swimming. You know how you see that on social media, you see Facebook groups, and there's like 40 boats all rafted up.
Oh,
and
yeah,
they're all,
yeah.
You know, swimming and drinking and eating and playing music and just enjoying the day, having a blast out on the water.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there was about 5 or 6 boats.
Okay.
But it was sandbar. The water was only like 3 feet deep.
Mm-hmm.
So we're paddling by. There's one guy standing beside the boat. He's the only guy in. And Alan, you hear him, okay, put your hand up if you're peeing right now. And he looks at the guy. Guy puts his hand up. So that was kind of cool to do that. See all that. And, so that following the Steve's location on the Locata Web website, we were able to see where he was, where he's coming across from the shore, where he was going to eventually hit the west shore. So he zoomed over to there, and eventually we met up with him. Took a few minutes to land at a beach and stretched the legs, because he'd been paddling for a few hours at that point. And it was nice to meet Steve in person instead of over a Zoom call.
Yes.
Right, which was really nice. Most of the kinks were worked out and jumped back in the boats and headed north back to Bob Cajun. Chatted as we paddled, not in a big hurry to get up the lake. We asked Steve about, you know, how his trip's been, how his gear's working and all that sort of stuff, and where he's planning to spend the day and the night. And
did you record any of it?
Didn't record any of it, no. But it was definitely a beautiful day to be out on the water.
Yeah.
You know, so we're just, like I say, just laid back, relaxing. Made it back to the sandbar, and there were a lot of boats.
Oh, by that time.
Yes. If you go to Alan Drummond's Facebook page, I don't know if it's on his Instagram as well. There's a houseboat there with some inflatable things on the back.
Okay.
And there was one giant, inflatable that resembled a body part, but it flashes really, he did the, put it in the video and it flashes really fast. Yes, that is what you think it is. But yeah, people were just out, you know, like I say, swimming, sunbathing, eating, having a couple of beverages, and you know, it seemed to be all pretty cool, and people were, you know, being sensible.
Cool.
And just enjoying. We chatted with a couple of people as we passed through them, because we weren't going around them.
Yeah.
Just, you know, doodly doodly doodly, just passing through. Cool. And farther up the lake, we're, you know, having a chit-chat. All of a sudden, a motorboat comes ripping by. And they're yelling, is that Steve? Huh. So they'd been tracking Steve and looking for him, and they realized where he was. So mm-hmm. They all hopped in the boat and came ripping up. Steve had originally met them in Florida, and then when he came up this way, they had hosted him in Oshawa when he did his Great Loop paddle back in 2019.
Okay.
So they knew he was coming back up for a second round at this.
Mm-hmm.
So they thought, oh, because I guess they've moved up towards Bob Cajun now.
Oh.
So, yeah, so they made a point of tracking them and getting out, and nice. So they chit-chatted with her for a few minutes, and then we continued on our way, and wind started picking up about that, and same with the waves, you know, that late afternoon thing. As we continued on our way to the mouth of the canal, eventually back to the lock at Bob Cajun. Once through the lock, we headed back to where we had put in and said our goodbyes to Steve. He was heading a little up the river to a marina where he had arranged to spend the night.
Okay.
And, you know, people are happy there to put him up and feed him and all that sort of stuff. So that worked out well. Another great day on the water paddling and, like I said, some sunburn, suntan, a bit of windburn, a lot of fun. So, yeah, quite the busy weekend on the water, I must say. And then I had to go back to work today.
Yeah, you finally got some rest when you back to work.
Yeah, right? So, other than that, that was about it.
That's awesome. That was a busy weekend.
It was a really busy weekend. But you know what? Like I say, after all that unexpected... I've had so much unexpected stuff this summer, and weekends, I thought I was going to have all these weekends off, and I haven't.
Yeah.
It's just been one thing after another, and having to do stuff around, and with Tracy's schedule at the college, all of a sudden exploded. I guess they changed managers and found out things. There were students that were supposed to do courses so they could get their critical care for nursing and stuff like that that hadn't had the courses yet.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden some of the students said, well, I'm just showing up. So then they started. So, you know, yeah, we got 12 students coming this weekend and 30 show up.
Oh.
So they have to start getting all that. So it's like more weekends working the college and all that sort of. Oh, man. It's like all the stuff we wanted to do just not happening.
Yeah.
This has been like the last year of this.
Just busy.
Since last summer. You know, putting stuff on hold, not getting out like we're supposed and whatnot. And it's just like, we are all just counting down the days to Japan. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, a couple of people sent me this one, including you today. There was a foal, a small little horse, found itself stuck in the Kananaskis River. This is a little bit of a feel-good story. Would have been in big trouble had paddlers Anna Gleig and Ava Haddad not come by. Two were making their way down the Kananaskis River when they came across a group of horses along the bank. Haddad says one horse was walking along the shoreline, settling into the river in front of their boat. We were kind of freaking out because there's a massive horse that's just in the water stopping us from continuing on. Then we look to our right, and there's a baby horse pinned against the concrete part of a bridge, and it was unable to move or get out.
Lucky it was still floating.
Right? Said the mother horse was quite panicked as the depth of the water prevented her from reaching her foal. We went forward and decided we need to save this foal, Haddad said. They dragged the boat up to the shore before venturing back into the water, scaring off the adult horses in the process. Rescuing the foal was a team effort. Gleig grabbed it while Haddad paddled. Somehow we were able to drag him across the river back to the safer bank. He's like 80, 90 pounds, less than a week old, so still a big animal, but very small for a horse. I've been a lifeguard, and I'd spent a lot of time on the river, so was kind of used to that sort of training, Gleig says. Haddad said the rescue was a success, with the foal fully cooperating. He didn't fight back against us. He just let us take him, so that worked out really well. That's always the best.
Yeah.
When the wild animal you're trying to save...
doesn't act wild.
Just doesn't act wild.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say a wild animal. I don't know if they were actually domesticated.
Oh, they could have been wild horses or something. Yeah. Who knows?
Now that it was rescued, a new problem arose. The adult horses, including the foal's mother, had been scared off during the rescue. We were stuck with him without his mom or anything. We tried to leave him in the sun, hoping that mom would come back if we weren't there. But we ended up waiting on that shoreside for about an hour and a half, and they never ended up coming back. Every time we tried to paddle away without the foal in hopes the mother would return, he would hop straight back into the water, which was not ideal.
Huh.
I think he just didn't want to be left alone, which made it a little bit more complicated for us. Determined to keep the foal safe, the pair took matters into their own hands. I ended up putting my life jacket on him, picking him up, and putting him in the boat with us. And miraculously, somehow, he was calm enough and was okay with being in the boat.
He's probably young enough that he doesn't know.
Doesn't know better.
Yeah. No, this is normal.
Yeah. Pear paddled downstream with the foal for about 20 minutes. He took a little nap because he was so tired, Gleeg says. As the two tried to figure out what to do, Gleeg was able to get a hold of somebody from the nearby Menithni community. The man who arrived at the scene recognized the horses solely from photos he was shown. Guy knew exactly what herd the foal was from because we showed him photos. He came, picked up the foal, put him in the back of his pickup truck, and drove him back. Afterwards, the foal was successfully reunited with his mother. It was a good ending, which made for a good day. Haddad was happy the two were able to help the foal. He has this second chance at life, she says. If we weren't there, he probably wouldn't be here today.
Chances are. He wouldn't have made it.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't
pinned.
Yeah, he was. So yeah. The current was holding him against that buttress of the bridge. Mm-hmm. And he just would have sunk in.
Yeah. So, yeah, nice little feel-good story. Yeah. And there are pictures. If you Google the story, there are pictures of this tiny little
of him. So that looked like they had a pack raft or something. And so it showed the foal inside their pack raft and very long pack raft, inflatable kayak maybe, I don't know. Whatever it was, the foal was in there wearing a life jacket. It's like, I see a horse wearing a life jacket. At least he's being safe.
Right? See, and that's what happened with wild dogs.
Mm.
Somebody put one on a couch one day, and they never left.
They never left.
And now they expect to be fed at least twice a day, let out to pee-pee, and you got to clean up in your yard after them. If you would have left them off the couch.
Yeah.
Forest fires. Canada has recently experienced two of its worst wildfire seasons on record. More than 5 million hectares burned last year, the most in recent years, aside from 2023 when wildfires scorched 16 million hectares. That's a lot.
That's a lot of trees. It's a natural process, I want to add, but it's like we
mostly been, natural process. Yeah.
Mostly. Yeah, because there are...
There were some that were started by pitbulls.
Yeah.
Alberta was hit especially hard, including the popular tourist town of Jasper, where a third of the community burned in July 2024. Early signs point to another active wildfire season in 2025, particularly in Western Canada. So you brought up this point after seeing this, saying, if you're heading out on a paddling trip, it seems to be that trip planning should include a last-minute check for potential forest fires in your chosen area.
You can't control what's going to start after you leave.
Mm.
You can be careful and cautious, but if you know that there's a forest fire and like, hey, you're planning on woodland caribou, and it's like, okay, we're getting ready to go. Hey, you know what? It's 3 days out. Is there any forest fires in the area?
Right.
2 days out. 1 day out. Okay, we're leaving today. Is there any forest fires in the area? Like, what was it? Andy and Kevin were up in Northern Ontario, and they were somewhat affected by forest fire. So they experienced the smoke. I don't think they experienced the fire itself.
Yeah.
But it's something to include in your planning process as we start to see these greater summer forest fire seasons. And you don't want to, if you can change your plans at the last minute and go somewhere else to avoid an area that's going to be smoked in. Like when we did our Algonquin trip and the fires of Quebec, the smoke came in. Like, I remember.
We weren't affected at all until the last couple of nights.
Very last night at like 2 a.m, I woke up thinking, oh, I really smell wood smoke.
Yeah.
So I had a bit of a panic thinking, hopefully it's not local because we didn't have a fire, right?
Yep.
So it was like, okay, what's going on? But it was just because it was so strong, it was like you were
pretty close to one.
Pretty next to a campfire or something. So, yeah, it's if you can afford the area and keep yourself safe, keep your family safe, friends safe, then maybe at last minute you might want to pick a new camping location that's going to save you from forest fires.
Because you wouldn't want to wake up at 2 a.m. and all of a sudden, what's this big orange.
Why is it so bright out?
Bright out.
Yeah.
But I tell you, it's going to teach you to pack up really fast.
Pack fast.
Right?
Get on the water.
So, yeah, and you can find many forest fire tracking resources online.
The one that I found today, it was a really good example. It was on CBC, but like the Government of Canada also has maps. You can, if you go to Google Maps and you just Google in wildfires on maps. So instead of saying, you know, whatever town, Ontario, or whatever town, USA, if you type into Google current wildfires or just wildfires, like there's a couple times where it didn't work and I found like the Wildfire Cafe and whatever. but if you get the right algorithm, it'll show you if current fire and the limits of the fire in Google Maps. So that's a good tool too. The CBC page is, I've been looking at that for the past month or two. So to see the extent. And so they give smoke coverage, drift, smoke drift, fire danger areas, and so on, evacuation areas. So there's a lot of stuff out there that's available to plan your trip or do a last minute, hey, is this, are we going to the right place at the right time?
Yeah. So check it out.
Yeah.
Check it out. Make part of your plan. Last thing I got here, these days, scoring a backpack permit, or campground in the country's popular national parks, this is in the U.S. states, can feel like a chore. And that's if you're lucky enough to get one at all. But conventional park visits aren't the only option. Also possible to explore less visited national parks via waterways, allowing you to skip the most of the traffic and crowds, which is really nice. There are 7 national parks in the United States that are best enjoyed by kayak, canoe, or stand-up paddleboard. These parks spread across the country from Florida to Washington, also have some of the lowest visitation numbers in the park system, partly because many of them are only accessible via a boat or ferry. If you got a boat or a canoe, then you got a one-way ticket to snorkeling coral reefs, fishing for lobster, and seeing the northern lights up close. And if you don't own one, you can always rent one and still have fun on the water this summer. There you go. So our list of boat-friendly national parks, along with some tips for making the most of your trip. First off, and we've talked about this one before, is the Isle Royale National Park in Michigan. Located in Lake Superior between Minnesota and Michigan's Upper Peninsula, Isle Royale National Park is a true escape. It's lush, remote island that feels worlds away from ordinary life. To get there, you'll need to travel by seaplane, ferry, or private boat.
It's very remote.
Camping, boaters are welcome to stay overnight at more than 20 docks and boat-in campgrounds. Most sites have a limit on how many nights you can stay consecutively, and all are first-come, first-served. Any overnight stay with a boat requires a permit. If kayaking and canoeing are more your speed, ferries allow customers to bring their vessels along with them. From there, it's possible to paddle around the island, staying at campgrounds that dot the shore. When it comes to fishing, there are, when the NPS describes a park as an angler's paradise, that's the national park system, you know the fishing has to be good. Isle Royale is full of multiple varieties of trout. Be sure to acquire a fishing license from the Michigan Department of Natural Resources first.
And if you Google Tarpon Natural Resources, you can also Google, find out what lakes are stocked with fish and what types of fish. Because I know the U.S. and Canada both have programs to restock lakes. Mm-hmm. They basically fly in and airdrop fish into certain lakes, right? And in near north and far north Ontario, there's a lot of lakes between southern Ontario and like Sudbury, Highway 11, whatever, that they stock these lakes on a routine basis, on a rotational basis. Yep. So you're going to be able to find a lot of fish in these lakes.
Yeah. Channel Islands National Park, California. Channel Islands National Park, a series of 5 islands off the coast of Southern California, known for stunning ocean views and rugged coastlines. Park is only accessible by public ferry or private boat. Once you arrive on the islands, there is no transportation available, making a kayak or boat essential in order to enjoy the entirety of the park. Only one of the five islands, Santa Cruz Islands, requires a permit to dock. Each island has a designated campground, which are reservable and require anywhere from a quarter to a mile walk from the dock, so be sure to pack light. Unless, of course, you're a canoe tripper and you're used to packing heavy. best hikes, take each island and its idyllic oceanic setting from a wide selection of trails. For an easy loop, try the Cavern Point Trail on Santa Cruz Island, a two-mile hike that offers a great vantage point for whale watching. Water Canyon Beach Hike on Santa Rosa Island is a flat three-mile walk that takes you along the island's pristine white sand beach. Be animal aware. Visitors to Anacapa Island, be warned, from April to mid-August, western gulls nest on the island, which can produce guano, strong odor, constant noise, bird carcasses, and birds protecting their territory.
Yes.
Stay mindful of food storage due to the presence of foxes and ravens that have a knack for getting into zippers. Food storage boxes are provided at the campgrounds. Yeah, I'd stay away from that island. Voyageur National Park, Minnesota. A watercraft is a must-have to fully explore and appreciate Voyageur National Park, a vast 218,000-acre area of lakes, forests, and streams in northern Minnesota. The park is an excellent place to try to get a glimpse of the famed Northern Lights as they dance across the night sky. Park is home to 157 front country campsites, which are only accessible via boat, canoe, or kayak. It's possible to plot out a customizable itinerary, paddling from site to site. Camping requires a permit, which is available online. Yeah, so you could say, I'm going to stay here the first night, and then paddle, and stay here the second night, and paddle. And if you're looking for even more of a remote experience, try hiking among the park's 14 backcountry campsites. You can get a water taxi to your start point, and then hike between campsites. Nah. some backcountry sites are only accessible by canoes, which are provided with your permit when you reserve a site. These sites are located in a series of interior lakes on the Cabotagama Peninsula. This heavily wooded area turns into a bright rainbow of stunning foliage in the fall. Fishing, given that 40% of Voyageur's total area is water, it's unsurprising that it's well known as a fishing destination. Common species include walleye, smallmouth bass, northern pike, and yellow perch. Anglers must acquire a Minnesota fishing license and follow the state's regulations. Always do that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Dry Tortugas National Park, Florida. That's got like pirate written all over it.
Yes.
Located 70 miles from Key West, Dry Tortugas is one of the nation's most remote parks. But after one visit, you'll be glad you made the trek.
If it was pirates, it'd be wet tortugas.
Oh, maybe. Less than 1% of the park's area is dry land, so a boat is a must-have. Visitors can get to the island via seaplane, ferry, or private boat. Campsites are available only at Garden Key. Sites are first come, first served. However, the National Park Service guarantees space to all campers who arrive through a designated overflow area. This campground is the only place on the island that allows overnight docking to private boats. Dry Tortugas Garden Key Island is home to Fort Jefferson, a military outpost built in the 19th century to protect against piracy.
Ha-ha! There you go. The pirates are mentioned.
Guests can tour and explore the structure, which is the largest brick masonry building in the Americas. Coral reefs full of diverse marine life are one of the park's highlights, and swimming and snorkeling are popular activities. dive in and swim alongside sea turtles, colorful reef fishes, and whale sharks. Loggerhead Key has a designated swimming area that is calm and shallow with coral formations close to shore. Kayaking or paddleboarding between keys is a great way to explore multiple areas and find beaches you can enjoy all yourself. That one sounds cool.
It does.
That would be nice. That, yeah. Yeah. Especially if you had a pirate ship.
And what did they say? They said that... Was this the one that was 95% water? Or did I read ahead?
I think you read ahead. Stop it. yeah.
That's Biscayne Bay. Yeah, Biscayne Bay is 95%.
Don't spoil it. North Cascades National Park, Washington. North Cascades National Park, Stehekin Valley is home to Lake Chelan, the third deepest lake in the United States. You're looking for true peace and quiet. This is the park for you. 2024, it was the second least visited national park with just over 1,600 visitors. Still a lot of visitors. But still. The only way to access the area is by foot, ferry, horseback, or private boat. Do you think the horse could carry a canoe?
As a polk, you could. Right? Like if you had a couple skids and
or wheels just, or...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Lake has 16 public docks, all of which require a $10 daily permit. Canoeing and kayaking are popular activities as well, but visitors should know that personal watercraft, like jet skis, are not permitted. I've seen a lot of that going through some of these national parks and stuff. Like, jet skis not permitted. Camping, in addition to backcountry camping, there are three boat-in camping areas. The 19 sites are all first-come, first-serve. Dock at Weaver Point, and use it as a base to explore the area's many hiking trails, including the Stehekin River Trail to Rainbow Falls, a 300-foot waterfall.
Oh, nice.
Visitors shouldn't miss the chance to visit Buckner Orchard, a 10-acre working apple orchard that began as a homestead in 1911. Possible to pick apples in the late summer and early fall, and the property hosts square dances, live music, and an annual harvest fest in August. And here I am going to Japan.
Yeah,
when I could be out in Washington square dancing and picking apples. Bet you they got apple pie, apple crumble.
Yep. Oh, yeah. All the apples.
Apple sauce.
Apple cider.
Apple cider. Get sauced. Biscayne Bay National Park, Florida. Derek wants to get into this one. Only about 35 miles away from Miami, but it provides a welcome respite from the busy city.
I think this is where Dexter used to do some of his cleanups.
Oh, yeah? I never watched the show.
I loved it. It was good.
Explore vibrant coral reefs that are home to more than 500 species of fish, as well as lush jungle-like mangrove forests. The park is 95% water.
That. I didn't know that.
Yeah, making it an ideal choice for boat-based getaways. Park has two campgrounds that are located on Boca Chica Key and Elliott Key. Both are only accessible via boat, and both are first come, first serve. There are no services on these islands, but the campgrounds do have restrooms, grills, and picnic tables.
Well,
I call that services.
Yes, absolutely.
I guess the only thing missing out of those that we get up here would be water.
Yeah.
You'd have to bring water in with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unless, you can't count
unless
on...
you really enjoy salt water.
Yeah.
But that may be a health issue after a while. Due to the shallow water and high incidence of hurricanes, that could also be a problem. This part of the coast has been the site of many shipwrecks. It's possible to snorkel and view the remnants of these historical ships with the park's Maritime Heritage Trail.
Cool.
Birding is another popular activity. Visitors can tour the Biscayne Birding Trail to spot a whole host of shorebirds, migratory warblers, and wading birds. The wading birds are the ones that wear the hip waders.
Okay,
that's how you can tell
them. Yeah.
That's how you tell them the difference from the shorebirds.
Little tiny waders.
Little tiny waders on.
With suspenders that go up over their
toes. Yeah, as opposed to shorebirds who just have regular rubber boots on. Birding is something you can go down there and do. And if you're not into that, if you're into fishing, to preserve fragile coral reefs and prevent damage from anchors, boats are required to use the provided mooring buoys when out on the water. All fishing requires a license from the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission. Popular catches include spiny lobster, bonefish, snapper, redfish, and multiple species of a grouper.
Hmm.
Can you imagine being out there? So you went fishing. What'd you catch? Lobster.
Yeah.
So you're thinking, I'm going to have a pickerel dinner. No, you're going for lobster. Good old lobster dinner. Lobster again? Congaree National Park, South Carolina. Located about a 30-minute drive from Columbia, South Carolina, is one of the Southeast's largest bottomland hardwood forests and an area rich in biodiversity. Its many rivers and lakes make it an aquatic oasis perfect for exploration by canoe or kayak. Park has a multiple itineraries for canoe trips ranging in length from a few hours to a few days. 50-mile Congaree River Blue Trail takes paddlers across almost the entire expanse of the park. Dispersed backcountry camping on sandbars is allowed with a permit. Paddling along the river gives visitors the best chance of seeing wildlife like turtles, eagles, and otters. Otters would be cool.
It would be. Are these the big giant sea otters that'll kill you?
I don't think so. I think they're the regular small guys that'll just harass you and bite you. As long as anglers are 25 feet away from any man-made structure, they can fish anywhere in the Congaree National Park. Visitors should obtain a South Carolina fishing license. Follow all stated regulations. Motorized boats are not allowed in the park,
nice.
So canoes and kayaks are a necessity.
Perfect.
Common species include striped bass, black crappie, yellow perch, and channel catfish.
If you're looking
for something a bit different, getting away from the crowd.
I don't think we've ever covered these before.
And the regular hustle and bustle, check out those seven places.
Oh, that's Biscayne right. Bay is definitely I'd like to go check out.
Tortuga guys. Isle Royale, that's a good one because it's still got the moose and the wolves on it, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Channel Islands out in California, Voyageur National Park in Minnesota. That sounds like a really cool one. North Cascades, Congaree. You want to go to Biscayne Bay, you say?
I would.
You go there. I'd go to the Tortugas.
I would be as nervous. So camping out in BC out west, I'd have just as much nervousness camping there as camping down in Florida. Because out west, you've got those crazy grizzly bears. And so grizzlies, I don't know, like they scare me. And I don't know, what is it, a crocodile, alligator in Florida? I always confuse the...
Alligators.
Alligators. So
crocodile of the Nile.
Yeah.
Speaking of bears, it is not just a North American thing. A fed bear
is a dead bear. People don't get that.
No. So the only reason, because you're talking about bears, and it just reminded me of my daughter went on this cruise up in Hokkaido, northern mm-hmm. Japan.
Yeah.
And there they have the Hokkaido brown bear. And it's a big bear. She saw a couple when they were on the cruise. So they're zipping by and on the boat and along the shoreline, they see some of these bears.
Okay.
And she's saying, like, they look like the size of a grizzly bear.
Oh.
And there's lots.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the places they went, somebody had put up a sign. And a local resident wrote and posted an article in three languages around a roadside station as a warning to visitors. And they actually put, a fed bear is a dead bear. And there's a picture of a dead Hokkaido brown bear.
Oh.
Do not feed bears. Stay away from bears. Once a bear has contact with people and is rewarded with food or trash, the bear will associate people with food and will break into vehicles and residences to obtain it. Unfortunately, such a bear must be killed for the safety of humans.
Exactly.
And then they talk about the tragic end of sausage.
What?
Code name was 97B-5, a.k.a. Sausage. They first met the bear in the fall of 1997. She had just become independent of her mother. The following summer, she began frequenting areas of a park where humans were present. One day, a park visitor fed sausage to the bear. A big mistake. As a result, the bear became even bolder. Humans and vehicles were no longer a source of fear, but food. She constantly hung around the busy roadsides looking for a handout. We know this was a bad sign because there is a history of food-conditioned bears in the U.S. national parks injuring humans. Some injuries leading to deaths. We repeatedly and severely sent the bear away, attempting to teach her to avoid humans and busy roadsides. Nevertheless, Sausage kept coming back for more food. Following spring, Sausage began roaming around a residential area. Although she appeared to be tame, she was a potential threat to all the residents. One morning, the bear was seen eating a deer near an elementary school. We had the inevitable decision to make, and we had to carry it out before the children got to school.
Mm-hmm.
Loaded my rifle, approaching the bear. In the rifle scope, she seemed to have a strained look on her face. Pulled the trigger, and the rifle sounded, and Sausage's life ended in an instant. She was born in the forest of Shiritoko and was meant to have lived long life and die a natural death, but her life was sadly cut short, all because of a sausage.
Mm-hmm.
Fed bear is a dead bear. So something to remember. Everybody wants to see the animals and that out there, but they're wild animals. They need to remain wild. Even they say, like, there's Mew Lake in Algonquin Park this month. While you were away, so you probably didn't see it. Somebody posted videos. There was a lone wolf running around the park.
Oh, wow.
And it was being rather bold.
Hmm.
I haven't seen any updates.
Mm-hmm.
But they've taken black bears and moved them hundreds of miles away.
And they...
Yeah. And the bears come right, they say some sort of radar, like a migratory bird.
Yeah.
They go right back to, and if they, it keeps happening, they have to shoot, well, they don't have to, that's what happens.
Certain decisions have to be made.
Yeah. And usually, unfortunately, wildlife is at the wrong end of that stick. So, you know what, like I say, you think about it being a North American thing when all these campgrounds and stuff like that, but as you can, this is northern Japan. Same thing.
Yeah.
And before you feed the animals and stuff like that, just take a moment to think about, you know, is this for you? And what's it going to do to the animal? So, anyway, that, just you talking about bears reminded me of the conversation I was having with my daughter a couple days ago. And that was, the end of sausage. Sad. You got anything else?
I do not have anything to add.
Well, neither do I. No.
Is that an hour and a half?
Yeah. An hour and 25 minutes. Podcast. Something like that. See? We can keep on going if you want.
No.
I can start making stuff up.
Sometimes I think that over an hour is too long for people to listen to.
No, it's just because you're getting tired.
No.
It's been a long work day.
When I have too many podcasts on my Player FM,
yeah,
I automatically delete anything that's over an hour.
Really?
Without even looking at what it says.
Well, then you should have stopped talking an hour ago.
You're the one that keeps talking.
All righty. Well, nice to have you back, Derek. Regardless. If you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream all our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com and you can stream or download all our episodes there. Just a side note, I know some people have been having issues with Apple downloading and listening there.
Oh, yeah?
I don't understand. I don't know why. There's only a couple of people, and I've been asking some other, you have problems with this? No problems.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's happening there. So if you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.